నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ. ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ. క్యాంటో 8 Chapter 22, chapter entitled Bali Maharaj Surrenders His Life, text number 28. Esha Danava Daityana Agrani Kirti Vardhana Ajayshi Dajaya Maya సీదన్నపి నముహ్యతే. Translation: Bali Maharaj has become the most famous among the demons and non-believers, for in spite of being bereft of all material opulences, he is fixed in his devotional service. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj Srila Prabhupada. In this verse, the words Sidan Api Nah Muhiyati are very important. A devotee is sometimes put into adversity while executing devotional service. In adversity, everyone laments and becomes aggrieved. But by the grace of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, a devotee, even in the worst condition, can understand that he is going through a severe examination by the Personality of Godhead. Bali Maharaj passed all such examinations as explained in the following verses. Om Agyanatimirandhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Hare Krishna. So today, being a very auspicious day of the appearance of Sri Sri Radha Gopinath, it is indeed fortunate to be speaking on the Srimad Bhagavatam, and hence I would like to seek the blessings of all the devotees assembled here so that we can properly speak on this verse. Mukam karoti vachalam pangum langhayate girin yat kripatam aham vande shri gurum dinatarinam paramananda madhavam shri chaitanya ishwaram. Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Nityananda Sahodito Gaurudaya Pushpavanto Chitra Shandau Tamonudo Ugrapyanugraye Vayam Subhaktanam Nrikeshri Keshri Vasupotanam Annesham Ugravikramaha. Esha Danava Daityanam Agrinihi Kirti Vardhanaha. So amongst all the Danavas and the Daityas, Danavas means the descendants of Danu, one of the wives of Kashyapa Muni. Basically, their entire race is very demoniac, somehow or the other. So, they are sometimes called as demons or Danavas. And Daityas are the descendants of Diti, another wife of Kashyapa Muni, and also the sister of Danu. And this particular race does not believe in the existence of a supreme controller. Or even if there is a controller, they want to finish him off and assume control. So they are called the Daityas. So amongst such demons and disbelievers or non-believers, there is Agranihi, there is someone very superior, someone foremost, Kirti Vardhanaha, whose glories are well known throughout the universe. And who is that? Eshaha. This Bali Maharaj, who has right now, as we are reading the Bhagavatam, is right now being put into bonds and chains and very much humiliated by the Lord who has appeared as Vamanadev. Ajayashid ajayam mayam sidan api namuhiyati. Why is Bali Maharaj, although from the Daitya and Danava race, or who has connections with the non-believers and the demons, why is he famous or glorified at the topmost devotee? In fact, his glory is Ajayashit. It has already surpassed, and it is Ajayam. Cannot be conquered by anyone else. It is insurmountable. How is it? Sidan api namuhyati. Because despite such calamities, in fact, no one in history has suffered a calamity like Bali Maharaj. Never before and never after. He lost everything. Specifically for someone who was aspiring to gain everything, had gotten everything, and was in a position to establish himself as the unconquerable controller over all that he wanted. Losing all his possessions, and in fact, his own existence, in one sense, independent existence, is very painful. And hence, he agrinihi ajayashit. No one has been able to surpass what he did in this calamitous situation, in this great adversity. So, sidan api na muhiyati, despite such a big change in his life, such a great storm that completely destroyed all of his aspirations, he is not bewildered. Na muhiyati. This is his glorious quality. He is not bewildered by such a change. For example, a small change of the temperature can bewilder us. A small change of time can bewilder us. Isn't it? If the train is slightly late, then we get bewildered. Or someone does not come to meet us on time, then we become disturbed. What to speak of Bali Maharaj? How is he not disturbed? Because he is the foremost devotee. And the quality of a devotee is that in all adversities they see, in all circumstances, and specifically in adversity, because adversity is what affects everyone in this world. In the opposite way, in the wrong way, in a way that one becomes confused, dejected. Therefore, especially in adversity, a devotee sees that this is the Supreme Lord's mercy. This is his blessing. Srila Prabhupada, in one of the purports, writes in the Srimad Bhagavatam that even in the most challenging situations, even if one's very life is being threatened, a devotee is never disturbed because he knows that Krishna is his well-wisher. So even if the body is lost, how can it be wrong? Even if my possessions go away, how can it be wrong? Because my well-wishing friend will never wish me ill. Before this, I used to think that Krishna being the well-wisher protects everything. Because Krishna is a well-wishing friend, therefore Krishna will protect a devotee. And the idea of protecting a devotee is protecting the devotee's life, protecting the devotee's possessions, so on and so forth. Maybe honor, repute. But Srila Prabhupada in that purport mentions that a devotee sees that Krishna is always his well-wisher. So even if according to material calculations, everything goes just the opposite way, the devotee still thinks, this is Krishna's well-wishing hand. This is for my benefit. Krishna is my well-wisher. So that makes a devotee fixed in Krishna consciousness. Understanding that Krishna is my well-wisher. So there are two points which show the contradictory nature of someone who is fixed in devotional service and someone who may not be fixed in devotional service, or even to the extent that someone may be a non-devotee. How do they see situations in their lives? In adversity, everyone laments and becomes aggrieved. So adversity is something that brings about one's lamentation, a feeling that one has lost something. And a devotee is sometimes put into adversity. However, even in the worst condition, can understand that he is going through a severe examination by the Supreme Lord and therefore is fixed. So these are two scenarios. And from the sixth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, we are going to take two incidences of adverse conditions and the response of the people who were in those conditions. The sixth canto begins, or in the beginning of the sixth canto, is the narration of the activities, the glorious activities of King Chitraketu, who later on becomes Vritrasur, the great demon, who was Indra Shatru, the enemy of Indra, specifically created to kill him. Sometimes we search for the purpose of life and we are wondering, what is life all about? What is the purpose of my life? Vritrasur never had any confusion. The purpose of his creation was to kill Indra. That was it. Just imagine how fixed, how totally unbewildered this person must be. No confusion, no doubts. My life, kill Indra. That is Vritrasur. So, King Chitraketu's life as a king and the experience that he and his family members undergo is described later on in the 14th chapter. And in the 11th chapter, his behavior as Vritrasur is being described. So first we'll go to the 14th chapter and we'll take two verses from the 14th chapter which describe the condition of his first queen. Srimad Bhagavatam describes that King Chitraketu was a man of great prowess. He had beauty, he had fame, he had knowledge, he had power, he had all of this, and he was the king of the entire planet, the emperor. His problem was he had no children. Absolutely none. So what did he do? He consulted all of his Ayurvedic physicians and he understood that he was perfectly capable of reproducing. His wife or his wives are also fertile. But no children. Somehow no children. So then he started trying to adjust his situation. Oh, I have one wife, I don't have a child, let me marry again. So he got married to another woman, had a second wife, still no child. He married a third time, still no child, a fourth time, 100 times, 1,000 times, 10,000 times, 1,000,000 wives. Can we imagine his frustration after 1,000,000 wives, still he had no child? Goes to show the nature of the material world, isn't it? We have everything, but there is that one we need. You know? And you start using all our possessions just to achieve that. And in the process, lose everything. All our money goes, I just want that, I want that, I want it, I want it, I want it, I want it. 1,000,000 times over. Still it is not achieved. So he was very depressed. Angira Rishi visited him. A sage of great prowess, strength, wisdom, someone who could see present, past and future and understand others' minds and hearts. He approached King Chitraketu and in a very diplomatic way, he asked him the welfare of his own life, the welfare of all of his family members and the welfare of his subjects, his kingdom. And finally said, despite everything being so well, why is your face so morose? And King Chitraketu says, ab aap se kya kehna? What can I say to you? You are the sage of great strength. You know already my heart and mind. Since you are asking, you want to hear it from my mouth, let me speak. I don't have a child. I wish to have a son, someone who can take over my kingdom after me. So Angira Rishi said, according to the calculations, my dear king, you're not supposed to have any child. No, please. The darshan and the vision of a sage, the presence of a sage cannot go empty. You have to give me some blessings. Angira Rishi said, that's true. So what do you want? Grant me a son. So Angira Rishi said, all right, if that is your desire, you may have a son. But this son will be someone who brings you happiness and distress. Both. Angira Muni never said distress and happiness. He said happiness and distress. Harsha Shoka. One should be intelligent when one gets blessings. What does it begin with and what does it end with? But King Chitraketu was so happy that he was going to get a son. He did not hear attentively. His son was born to his first queen, Kritadyuti. Everyone was so happy except the 999,000 other queens. Except them. Can you imagine how many people in the palace were unhappy? And what was the vibrations going on there? Such politics. So much behind the back. And it talks, and finally it culminated in everyone planning to murder the child. So they fed the child a particular poison whose traces could not be found in the body after death. And people think science had advanced only now. Just imagine, simple women in the palace, who are queens, obviously, have the knowledge to administer poison that will not leave any traces within the body. The son died. Oh my God. So much chaos, so much of crying, heart beating. And the Bhagavatam mentions that even the other 999,000, or if I'm right, I think that is it, 999,999. They also feigned sorrow. Only Sunday. So they were also crying. And that is when Kritadyuti expresses these two verses and her feelings in that. Aho vidhatas tamati vabalisho yastvatma srishti apratirupami hase parenu jivat Parasya Yamritir Viparyas Chitvam Asidhruva Para. Aho Vidhatastam Ativa Balisho. My dear Providence, O Lord, O God, Almighty, whoever you are extremely childish. You're not very intelligent. Yastvam Atma Srishti Apritirupam Ihase. Why? Why are you childish? Or why are you inexperienced? You do not have any experience in what you are doing. You are like a young child who just does things without thinking what will be the consequences. What is the reason that you are so balisha, you are so inexperienced? Atma srishti apratirupam ihasi. Because within your creation, we have seen, I have seen, says Kritadyuti, that you have done something totally contrary to natural occurrences. Now, if you were a good creator, you would not let something happen which is not in the natural flow of things. And what is the natural flow of activities? Jivatya pare aparasya mritihi. Pare means those who are right now existing. They are still alive. But someone who is younger than them, or the older senior people are still alive, but someone who is apara, who is younger than them, not older but younger than them, they are dead. Or in other words, how is it that the father is still living and the son is dead? Now in today's age, such a question would be totally frivolous, isn't it? So many sons die, so many fathers live. Things go on. But this is also a day and time when things actually worked. When rains would fall only in the night, sufficient enough, not too much, not too little. The earth would produce of her own desire, sufficient for the entire populace and the animal kingdom, everyone. So you are, because you have allowed a son to die before the father, which is not the natural way things work, therefore you are an inexperienced creator. Viparyayas chettam asi dhruva para. And then, why are you acting in such a way that is contrary to your own creation? Just imagine, if the law was, as soon as a son is born, as soon as a child is born, parents die. What would happen? Think about it. Parents have to live when children are born, right? They have to live till children grow. Similarly, every time a child is born, the parents live and the child dies. Or specifically when the parents are old and the children who are, you know, supposed to take care of them, all of them die. What would happen then? So the natural law is parents should live when children are born. They should live till the child grows up. And the parents should die before the child dies so that they have traversed their entire life properly. Right? But here, you have contradicted this law. And dhruva para means not only have you contradicted this law, but you are determined, you are fixed in contradicting this law. Therefore, she says, not only are you inexperienced, but you are an enemy of the entire creation. Because what is the use of having a God who contradicts his own laws? Srila Prabhupada in the purport writes, this is the way a conditioned soul condemns the supreme creator whenever he meets adversity. Right? If God was so intelligent, why did he let this happen to me? If God was so merciful, why did he let this come upon me? This is the way a conditioned soul always condemns the Supreme Lord in adversity. And sometimes such condemnation is in the form of an accusation that the Supreme Lord is not straightforward. The Supreme Lord is not... He does not act according to what he says. He is duplicitous. Why? Because in this world I see that some people are happy and some are not. They are happy and I am not. What type of God is this? Who chooses a few to be happy and others to be sad. Therefore, he must be a duplicitous God. Like here, she is saying, you are choosing us to be alive and my son to be dead. This is duplicitous. This is very crooked. So, specifically when providence behaves in this way, that a son dies in front of the parents' eyes, or a child dies in front of the parents' eyes, then one's idea of God being merciful is very much challenged. How does mercy work? This isn't mercy. We are old and now our young, you know, children are gone. How can God be merciful at all? So that idea is challenged. And sometimes we think, I don't believe in God now. Actually, God is my enemy. If he were not my enemy, then why would he have put me in such a grievous situation? How does one counteract this? This feeling that may arise within us or when we are faced with such questions, what do we answer? So Srila Prabhupada in his purport he says, we must understand how the law of creation works and not unnecessarily blame the creator. Yes? Like the laws of the road, we must understand how it works. Not that when one meets with an accident, being on the wrong lane, we say, oh, the lawmakers are all crooked. Why did they invent a law which killed my only family member? So one must understand how the laws of creation work. And one must know that these laws, being subtle, they work in accordance with the activities that we have performed. Or in simple English words, it means reap what we sow. We get what we have performed. Our performance gives the results, right? So like that. Only in ignorance does one criticize the supreme personality of Godhead. When one is ignorant of the laws of nature, then one criticizes. Yes? One can see a judge and say, this judge is foolish. One person says, die by hanging to death. Another says, mafi. Well, both are criminals. Both have come to his court. Why doesn't he give the same judgment to everyone? Because one is ignorant of the judicial laws and the crimes and what punishment should be given according to the crimes committed. Right? So, ignorance is the cause of condemning the Supreme Personality of Godhead as being very inexperienced or not knowing what he's doing. God does not know what he's doing. He does not know what creation is all about. Maybe he did creation, but then he ran away seeing the state of affairs in India now or all over the world. This is too much for me to handle. You know? Sometimes things go beyond our control. Mere se kuch mat bolo. Please don't tell me anything. I'm off. I wash my hands of this entire affair. So sometimes we think that God is someone who has washed off his hands, you know, from the entire creative affair. But things are going on their own. Not like that. The laws of nature always work. Then the next verse brings out her inner feelings more. The point that in adversity everyone laments and becomes aggrieved. That point from the purport we are stressing. Nahi kramascedi hamrutyu janmano shariri namastu tadatma karma bhi yasneha pasho nija sarga vriddhaye swayam kritaste tamimam vivrishchasi. She is saying that, my dear Lord, if you do not like my accusation that you are Balisha, and you say that, why do you blame me? I simply set the laws in action. If you do something to break the laws and get the reaction, why blame me? So if you are saying that nahi kramaschet iha mrityu janmano, where in the entire law book of mankind did I say that a son will never die before the father? Did I ever mention that? Does Krishna anywhere specifically say the son shall never die before the father? Where did I ever fix that someone's death is going to be before someone's or after someone else's death? Everything, shariram, shariri nam astu, tad atma karma bhi. Everyone is simply getting the reactions to the activities they have performed. These are simply reactions to a fruitive activity. So Krita Dyuti says, if that is your answer, if you are saying that fruitive activity is responsible for the reactions that we are suffering, fruitive activity, my own fruitive activity, my own karma is responsible for my son dying in front of my own eyes, then in that case, karma is more powerful than controller or God. Because karma is controlling life and death, mrityu and janmano. So again, that brings forth the point that God is apahij. No? He's handicapped or he's weak. Now, to counteract that, you may say, no, that is now how it is. A controller is necessary to see how material nature properly functions or how the laws of action and reaction function. But he is not directly to be blamed. Then I put forward another accusation unto you. What is that? Yasneha pasho nija sarga vriddhaye. If you say God simply sees or He is the overall supervisor of the laws of nature. And if you say according to his overall supervision, the laws are functioning. And fruitive activity is what is responsible for our reactions. Then in this case, in my case, the sneha pash, or the bonds of affection that you have created, which is necessary between a mother and a son, a mother and a child, it is very much important that a bond of affection be there. Just imagine, after birth, every mother in the hospital just walks off and says, I've done my business. That's it. I've brought forth a child. Now I'm walking off. Now you all take care of the child. How can a mother do that? There's this intense bond of affection. Where does a bond of affection come from? I mean, 12 years before, 2 years back, even 9 months or 10 months before, the mother never had any affection for a child like that. But as soon as she's carrying the child, and specifically when she delivers, gives birth to a child, there's such intense, can I see the face? My child looks just like me. A young child like that. Hardly any features can be seen, but that affection is there. Yes, so Kritadyuti is saying, if the bonds of affection that is so much important for the nurturing nature of the mother to come forth for rearing up a child, and fruitive activity is all predominant, then by your very laws of fruitive activity giving reactions, by your very laws that I have to see my son dying in front of me, completely destroy the basis of affectionate bonds. Because people will say, after all, law of creation will work. Why should I be affectionate towards my child anyways? Likha rahega to jiyega, nahi likha rahega to marega. Isn't it? After all, if it is all naseeb, you know, if it is all written here on the forehead, if it is all according to destiny, then why should I be affectionate towards this child? Hence, your answer, that fruitive activity is very powerful and it is controlling birth and death. Then what is the basis of these bonds of affection? In fact, since in my case and any other cases that may be like this, you have deliberately cut the bonds of affection that compel a parent to raise a child, therefore you are Balisha. Therefore you are most unintelligent and the most inexperienced creator. You do not even know what laws to put forth. So again, in the purport, Srila Prabhupada says that how it is important to understand that everything that Krishna creates, if properly put into action according to his laws, then everything works towards the proper goal. And the proper goal is to be Krishna conscious and go back to the spiritual world. In fact, if one is situated in pure devotional service, then Srila Prabhupada quotes the Brahma Samhita and says, Karmani nirdahati cha kintu cha bhakti bhajam. Simply by the rendition of pure devotional service, all the reactions to our activities are completely burnt at the very roots. So, rather than criticize and condemn and accuse, one must understand that because we have not been Krishna conscious and we have not understood the ways how material nature works, all we are getting is the reactions to our sinful deeds. Now, if we take up to the practice of Krishna consciousness sincerely and with determination, being fixed, then such practice of Krishna consciousness burns all the reactions at its very root. And one is no longer subjected to the laws of karma. So anyways, the sixth chapter, 14th verse is explaining the views of someone who faces adversity and is aggrieved and lamenting. And what are the views? The Lord is unintelligent, inexperienced, does not know how to create, because he is contradicting his own very laws. And wonderful, very scientific, Very logical reasoning has been given. Unfortunately, 2 and 2 can never be 5, however you prove it. However logically we try to prove, it doesn't work. The laws of mathematics don't work like that. You know, 1 rupee can never be 1 paisa. You know, everyone knows this. Logically, 1 rupee can be proven to be 1 paisa if one is not attentive. Let me give you this logic. This is something to do with maths. So those of you who do not care of maths, I would say you're intelligent. But still bear with me. 1 rupee is equal to 100 paisa. 100 paisa is nothing but 10 paisa into 10 paisa. Now 10 paisa is nothing but 0.1 rupee. Now 0.1 rupee into 0.1 rupee is nothing but 0.01 rupee. Therefore 1 rupee is equal to 1 paisa. Very logical, isn't it? The problem is in the second step. The problem is 100 paisa is 10 into 10 paisa, not 10 paisa into 10 paisa. It is 10 times 10 paisa. If you take it as 10 paisa into 10 paisa, it becomes 10 paisa square or 10 square paisa square. That is the... So logically, it seems perfectly correct. With our brain, we see, unless until we are really attentive. That is known as the subtle laws. There's subtlety there. So similarly, logically, all her reasoning seemed to be correct. Unfortunately, it is 10 times 10 paisa, not 10 paisa into 10 paisa. The Supreme Lord is the overall controller and supervisor. And if we surrender unto him and follow his laws, things will work according to how he has set everything to work. Hare Krishna. So now we come to the next. Where Prabhupada says, a devotee, even in the worst condition, can understand that he is going through a severe examination. Now this is 3 chapters before when Vritrasur, who is King Chitraketu, next life. Again, King Chitraketu was, you know, having a good time. He had a Viman, he had his airplane roaming around the Himalayas, and somehow he gets cursed. And the curse is become a demon. A man eating Rakshasa. Just imagine, from King Chitraketu to become a demon, the first thing that has to happen is you have to die. So, first die, then be born as a demon. But Chitraketu Maharaj accepted it. He said, this is what the Supreme Lord wishes, let it happen. So he becomes a demon, Vritrasura. What type of a demon? Someone who has been destined to kill Indra. However, again, there is one subtlety. Instead of Indra Shatru, it became Indra Shatru. Means Indra Ashatru. Or someone who is going to be killed by Indra. And not someone who will kill Indra. So although he was produced to be the killer of Indra, because of a slight mistake in pronunciation, he was going to be killed by Indra. And he knew this fact. Everyone in the entire creation knew this fact. But still, he was a very powerful demon. So powerful that in the battle between the demigods and the demons, when the demons were getting an upper hand, Indra came forth riding on his Airavat mount, his elephant, and he took charge. And the demons were sent packing. So then Vritrasura became very angry. And the demigods, seeing the demons running away, they started chasing them. They got real strength now. Like, kahan bhagta hai? Thoda ruk ja, dikhata hu. You know, where are you running? Stay here for a moment. Face our arrows. Taste the sharpness of our weapons. But the demons are really, you know, they like to fight, but they do not have much of Kshatriya spirit sometimes. So the demigods, in that rush of passion, they started shooting at their backs, which is also not very much warrior-like. Warriors never shoot fleeing people, people who are running. Right? Therefore, in the Ramayana, it is stated that when Ravana, one of his greatest abhushans, one of his greatest decorations, was not his golden ornaments, was not his strength, but the different scars on his chest. The scar of the weapon of Shiva, the scar of the weapon of Indra, of Vayu, of Agni, of all the demigods. And there was not a single scar or blemish on his back. Which meant he never turned and ran or ever fled in battle. He was always facing his enemy. So that was his greatest decoration. all the scars on his chest. For a warrior, that is the greatest decoration. So they started shooting and killing them from behind, attacking them, attacking their backs. So Vritrasura became so angry, he said, these demons, anyways, they are low class. They cannot even stand in battle and fight. They are running away. But you demigods, you are supposed to have some class. You are lower than them. Shooting at fleeing enemies. You are worse than the demons. If you are really so powerful, stand and face me. I, Vritrasura, alone challenge you. And started roaring. And by his roar, demons fell, the demigods fell unconscious. Because it was such a heart-piercing roar. The heart literally stopped working for some time. They fell down unconscious. Right? And some of them who stood, withstood that, Vritrasura started stamping and, you know, killing them, just walking on them. He was so powerful, big, stout. Finally, he came face to face with Indra. Indra became so angry at Vritrasura that he is like disdainfully killing all of my soldiers. That he became angry. He came on his Airavat. Airavat, powerful elephant. And he took his Vajra, his thunderbolt. And no, actually he took his club this time. And he threw his club with all of his might at Vritrasura. Now this club, as it was going through the ethereal space, as it was flying through the sky, the earth started trembling. And the entire universe, as if, you know, it was going to face destruction. Such was the power, the might behind that club. And the club was flying right at Vritrasura. And what did Vritrasura do? He was with his trident in his right hand, rushing towards Indra. With his left hand, he caught the club and threw it back. Just like that, in one motion, he threw it back. And such force. Maybe he knew jiu-jitsu or something. He took it like that and just used the same energy and some of his own power and threw it back. It hit Airavat on his head and he went back 14 paces. Airavat had never done that. Never gone back even one pace ever. And he was bleeding from his mouth and Indra almost fell down. Now this totally confused Indra. And he was there on the ground. Airavat was lying below. And because by the blow itself, when he fell, he also felt the blow sitting on Airavat. He also got some vibrations, which for a moment put him out. He became senseless. And Vritrasura was challenging, stopped. My opponent is senseless. I will not attack him now. So within that moment, Indra comes back to his senses, runs his nectar-producing hand over Airavat, cures all of his injuries, gives him immense strength, vigor, and energy. Airavat stands up. Indra is standing, sitting on him. But seeing Vritrasura standing there with his trident and his club already rendered useless, not only useless, but a big blow, Indra takes up that particular Vajra, he takes up that particular thunderbolt that has been specially manufactured from the bones of Dadichi on the orders of Lord Vishnu. He takes up that thunderbolt and is holding it to throw at Vritrasura, but his hand is trembling. He is not able to throw it. He is mesmerized simply seeing Vritrasura. And at that point, Vritrasura, who sees that Vajra in his hand and he knows, my time has come. This is death for me. Nothing I can do. This weapon has been ordained to kill me. But Indra there is trembling. Not in a position to release the Vajra. So these are the words that he offers to Indra. Please hear them carefully. Srila Prabhupada, because in today's purport that we are reading, he says, a devotee can understand that he is going through a severe examination by the personality of Godhead. And therefore, he is not disturbed in the worst condition. How does Vritrasura, although facing death, knowing that this is death coming at me, he is so calm. And how does he speak these words Whereas Indra, who knows he is holding the cause of death of Dhritarasura in his hand, is still trembling. Suresh kasma nahino shivajram purastite vairini maya mogham masangsha isthanagadeva vajrasya nishfala kripanarthe vayachna. So he says, Suresh kasma nahino shivajram. Why are you not throwing that thunderbolt at me, O king of the demigods? Because Indra is bewildered. Kono, kya kar raha hu? Who am I? What am I doing here? Why am I standing in front of everyone? Everyone has run away. Why am I holding this? Seeing this, he'll become more angry. So Indra is there, standing. So he's reminding him, Suraisha, O king of the demigods, why are you not hurling that thunderbolt at me? Purasthite, when I, Vairini, your worst enemy, someone, your certified enemy, when I, Purasthite, am standing in front of you, Mai Amogham, you are holding the weapon which is going to destroy your enemy. It is Amogha. Is it because you are in doubt? And what is the doubt? So Srila Prabhupada explains that. The first time Indra attacked Dhritarasura, he thought, I will do so by my own prowess. So he threw the club. What did Dhritarasura do? This is not meant to kill me. So he picked it up and threw it back. Dhritarasura knew exactly what he was doing. Indra was acting under passion. So his weapon, which was thrown, meant to kill Dhritarasura, came back at him and almost killed him and his elephant. So Indra understood, my attack is a disaster. I am incapable of challenging this foe. So this made Indra doubtful. He was thinking, Gada eva vajra, the gada, as my club failed, so my thunderbolt will also fail. What if Dhritarasura catches the thunderbolt and throws it back at me? This is a powerful thunderbolt. The club is my club, I know. So I could sustain its blow. But the vajra is not mine. It is specially manufactured. I know this. I know its power. What if he simply catches it and throws it back at me? So Indra is doubtful whether the vajra will be effective or not. Just see. Yes? This is his doubt. Now, Dhritarasura knew that the vajra will not fail. And why? Srila Prabhupada says in the purport, Dhritarasura, being a Vaishnava, knew that the vajra would not fail. Therefore, a Vaishnava always knows the plan of the Lord. He knows that this is an examination through which I must go through because it has been ordained by the Supreme Lord. This is how it must be. So be it. So the Vaishnava knows. A devotee knows. Knows the heart of the Lord. Knows the Lord's plan. So not only he knew, but he's telling Indra, Na sangshaya. Don't doubt. Are Baba, what you're holding is my death. Throw it. Don't doubt its prowess. Right? So, and he's using a beautiful analogy. Are you thinking that this vajra will also fail? Just as going to a miserly person and saying that, please give me some paisa, some money. And the miser says, kuch nahi hai mere paas. I don't have anything. So going and begging in front of a miser is always fruitless, isn't it? You don't get any benefit. So are you thinking similarly the vajra has been given by a miserly person? It has no power? It is fruitless? No, it is not like that. Your gada is fruitless. It hasn't much power. But this vajra has power. Ma, don't you doubt this. So Srila Prabhupada makes a very wonderful comment. He says, Vritrasur, being a Vaishnava, assured Indra that the thunderbolt will not fail because he knew that the thunderbolt had been prepared according to the instructions of Lord Vishnu. So he knew that Lord Vishnu had instructed it like that to be. Although Indra also knew this, he had his doubts because he could not understand that Lord Vishnu's order never fails. See, that is the difference. Indra also knew, but he had doubts. Bhagwan ki ichcha hi hoti hai ya nahi? Does everything actually happen according to the Lord's sanction or no? So he is confused. He is doubting the Lord's prowess, the Lord's instructions. Similarly, we should understand the instructions of the Lord in the form of the Bhagavad Gita never fail. Krishna describing the material nature, Krishna describing karma, Krishna describing the constitutional position of the living entity, Krishna describing his own existence as our Lord, the Lord of our lives. That is not untrue. We must have supreme faith in the instructions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is a Vaishnava. Indra was confused. And later on the reasons will be given why he was confused. But Vritrasur knew that the order of Lord Vishnu can never fail. Now, what was Vritrasur's confidence? What gives a devotee confidence in the plan of the Lord? This is the next verse where he is assuring Indra. Nanvesha vajras tava shakra tejasa harer dadhiches tapasat chet tejita teneva shatrum jahi vishnu yantrito yato harer vijaya shrir gunamstata. He says, this thunderbolt will not fail. It is very powerful, O Indra, because its power is coming from the instructions of Vishnu and the austerities of Vishnu's devotee, Dadichi. And this is the second point. Instructions of the Supreme Lord, when it comes to the via media of the Guru Shishya Parampara, a bona fide Guru disciplic succession, the austerities, the tapasya, the mercy, the compassion of the entire parampara has tremendous tejas, has tremendous power. And along with that, or let us say, the prowess of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the form of his instructions is supplemented with the powers of the great acharyas who propagate his message. There's a beautiful combination between the two. In the Bhagavad Gita, Srila Prabhupada explains this combination. He says, gold is beautiful. A golden ring is attractive. And a diamond which studs the golden ring is also beautiful. Together, they make a wonderful combination. So diamond is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the most precious element. Gold is also very beautiful. That is a devotee. Together, their combination is awesome. Best combination. So harer dadhites tapasa chotejita. The Supreme Lord, in the form of his instructions and the disciplic succession, like Srila Prabhupada and the entire Acharya Parampara, their prowess can surpass even the most insurmountable challenges and adversities in a life. So he says, so you don't worry, right? Kill me. Because that is instruction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Remember that for one who is dear to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one who is following the instructions which are dear to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whom the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself accompanies, is always with, because he is carrying the instruction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For such a personality, there is vijay, there is victory, there is shri, there is all opulence, because Krishna is there. And gunas and all the other good qualities automatically exist there. So you are going to have all the benefits. Don't you worry. Just shoot. So, Srila Prabhupada in the purport says, what Vritrasura is saying is, Indra, you are going to be victorious. You'll get all the opulences, everything. That is correct. But you have no faith in the order of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, you will kill me. That is true. However, your benefit will be heavenly kingdoms only here. That's it. And once that is over, chine punne marta lokam vishanti. Prabhupada says, there's the danger of falling down into the lower species of life. I, however, Vritrasur, I know that because I'm accepting the orders of the Supreme Personality of Godhead as my life and soul, and because I'm accepting the mercy of Dadichi Muni in the form of this weapon, therefore, with me is Lord Hari, with me is all opulences, with me is all victory, and with me are all the good qualities. In other words, I'm going back home, back to Godhead. Hari Bol. So that is the other understanding of this verse. And I'm going to get the Supreme Lord and his abode. You can stay here. Koi baat nahi. This is what you want? Take that. What I want is to die as early as possible and go back home, back to Godhead. How can a devotee be so nonchalant, you know, so detached? I mean, it's nice to hear it from the Srimad Bhagavatam, but practically, we walk out of this door and, you know, even a small bite troubles us. Why me only? Why troubles happen to me? My body, my property, my this, my that. How is it that a devotee can develop a quality where one can understand that the order of the Supreme Lord is my life and soul? It reigns supremely in my life. Whether it is, according to my vision, beneficial or it is adverse. Whichever it may be, his order is supreme. It reigns supreme. How does a devotee have that confidence? So that is the next verse, Vritrasura says. Aham samadhaya mano yathahana sankarshanas tacharanaravinde tvadvajra ramho lulita gramya pasho gatim muner yam yap viddha loka. So he says, aham samadhaya mano yathahana sankarshanas tacharanaravinde. He says, my Supreme Lord Shankarshan had already told me that Vritrasura, you will die at the hands of the thunderbolt and you'll go back home, back to Godhead. I have faith in the words of my Supreme Lord. And therefore, I have no grief. No, I have no pain in giving up this body. Although it is very powerful. I mean, all the demigods are running away in fear of me. This body that has given me this. Indra has been, you know, stopped in his tracks and sent behind. This body which had offered, it's a powerful body. But I have no qualms, absolutely none, in giving up this body and giving up all the material desires associated with this body. None at all. Because I'm going to achieve something much, 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 many times, millions of times over, more precious. An eternal life in the eternal realm with the eternal Supreme Personality of Godhead in an eternal association with him and all of his devotees. That is a precious gift that I am going to. Therefore, when Krishna assures us in the Bhagavad Gita that at the end of life, you remember me, give up this body, you'll come back to me. One must be happy to give up this body when a time comes and fix one's mind. Sankarshanas tacharanaravinde. Fix one's mind on the lotus feet of that all merciful, all loving Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, Sri Sri Radha Gopinath. And happily give up this body. And along with it, all of the desires that are associated with this body. So what makes a devotee confident that the Supreme Lord's order never fails is that if I follow the Supreme Lord's order, then all the troubles and trials and tribulations that are associated with this material existence, this material body, will get over at the time of death, definitely. Because Krishna has assured me that at the end of life, antakale cha mameva smaranutva kale yah prayati samadbhavam yati nasti yatra sankshaya asankshaya. No sankshaya. There can be no sankshaya about this, no doubt about this. One will achieve Krishna. Achieve Krishna's nature. Go back to him. So this makes a devotee confident in one's practice of Krishna consciousness, makes a devotee confident of facing adversities and still understanding that this is the order of my Supreme Master, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The next verse explains how a devotee with such faith into the Supreme Personality of Godhead can actually believe that it is true. What is assurance? You know, end of life, fix one's mind on Krishna's lotus feet, one is leaving one's body, body is left behind. Just imagine, you know, just recreate this scene within our material mind right now. We have left the body, the soul, that is we. We are going back to the spiritual world, you know. Past all the upper planetary systems, lower planetary systems have been left behind. We go across the Virija, the river separating material and spiritual universes. And there we see the lotus feet of Krishna. You know, there we see Krishna. And Krishna says, sorry, wrong number. Not you. There was one old lady, you know, and she met with an accident. So she goes to heaven. And the angels and God, actually she meets God. This is like a Christian joke, so God is there in heaven. So God says, and he says, oh, I'm so sorry. You have, your time hasn't come now, so go back. So she says, God, how many more years do I have to live? You have another 20 years. Oh, great. She goes back, she goes to the beauty parlor, gets, you know, all the plastic surgery done, becomes a young lady of 30 years, at least her looks. She was in her 50s, so she becomes, her looks, she improves to maybe 25, 30 years. The very next day she meets with an accident and dies. She goes to God again. God, she says, what? You told me I had another 20 years of life. Hey, I recognize your voice, but I don't recognize you. Therefore, the mistake was done. Anyways, that's a joke. So what happens? You know, we reach there to the spiritual world and Krishna says, who are you? How come you've come here? Go back. So what is the assurance? Go take the spiritual, take the heavenly planets, go to Brahma Loka, take Siddha Loka, take anything, but you cannot come. What? How can we be sure? We be sure that if we give up our lives thinking of Krishna, then Krishna will welcome us in the spiritual world. So this next verse explains that the Supreme Personality of Godhead never ever wants his devotees to achieve anything other than his spiritual abode. In fact, he forbids his devotees to endeavor uselessly for dharma, artha, kama, and even moksha. He forbids his devotees to aspire for any of these things, what to speak of the heavenly planets or the upper planetary systems. He doesn't want his devotee to aspire for that. He wants his devotee to aspire for the highest things and to endeavor for that. And that is the assurance, because Krishna wants it. Krishna wants more than we want it for ourselves, that we come back home, back to Godhead. And therefore, this, Vritrasur says, is the Supreme Lord's mercy. That he never wants his devotees to aspire for anything less than him. This is a supreme mercy. That is why he comes again and again to reassure us, please take up to my devotional service. Follow my instructions. This is a supreme mercy. And the conclusion of all of this. So this is how a devotee faces adversity. Understanding the plan of the Lord, understanding the order and instruction of the Lord, knowing that his order never fails, accepting adversities like that, knowing that despite all of these adversities, if one is fixed in Krishna consciousness, one will go back home, back to Godhead, because Krishna doesn't want his devotee to aspire for anything less than himself. So, what is the conclusion? The conclusion has been given by Vritrasura in these beautiful verses. Aham hare tava padai kamule dasanu daso bhavitasmi bhuyah manasmareta supater gunamste grinitava karma karotu kayah. These beautiful prayers, please, I'm just going to read the translations, which express the innermost heart and emotions of Vritrasura, who's facing the most challenging situation in his life. He says, O my Lord, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, will I again be able to be a servant of your eternal servants who find shelter only at your lotus feet? O Lord of my life, may I again become their servant so that my mind may always think of your transcendental attributes, my words always glorify those attributes, and my body always engage in the loving service of your Lordship. Padaika mula bhavitasmi bhuya dasanu daso. When will I become the servant of the servant of your servants? Because your servants are always at your lotus feet. When will I get that association, that opportunity to serve your servant? And by serving them in this way, I can engage all my body, my mind and words in your service. Srila Prabhupada in the purport says, therefore it is so very important to serve a spiritual master who is a servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because a spiritual master engages our body, words and mind in the service of the Supreme Lord perfectly. The next prayer expresses what a devotee is fearful of and does not even want to think about it. This is what one aspires to be, the servant of the servant. However, material nature is very tricky. Yes, habit, even H goes, a bit remains. Even A goes, still bit remains. If B goes, it remains. So material world, we've made it a habit of staying here. How much ever we wash with the best detergent, some bit, a bit, or it will remain. There'll be traces, isn't it? So, a devotee has to be fearful of these traces remaining. And fearful not in the sense of being dejected, but healthy fear. Healthy fear that I should never ever fall into the trap of these material desires again. And that is what Vritrasura prays in the next verse. Nanaka prishtham na chaparameshtyam na sarvabhaumam na rasadhipatyam na yoga siddhir apunar bhavamva. I do not want any of these things, my dear Lord, if there is no service unto your lotus feet attached to it. And what is that? I don't want the heavenly planets or even Dhruva Loka. I don't want even liberation. I don't want the controllership of the entire world. I don't want the controllership over the lower planetary systems too. Or even Rasatal or even Sutala planet. None of these I want. I don't want yoga siddhis. I don't want to be merging into you. None of these I want. I don't even aspire for the five kinds of liberation. If samanjasatva virahaya kankshe, if there is no association with you or there is no devotional service there, none of these things. So a devotee should not want anything which is bereft of Krishna's association. Now, what happens if a devotee has this intense desire to be the servant of the servant of the Lord and is very careful, having a healthy fear to avoid the traces of material distractions that may remain. What happens to a devotee like that? The next verse explains this beautifully. Ajat paksha eva mataram khagastanyam yatha vatsatara chudartah priyam priyeva vishitam vishanna mano arvindaksh didrikshate tvam. Just as baby birds who have not sprouted their wings wait desperately for the mother to come back to the nest. Or moreover, where a calf who is really hungry and sees its mother coming towards it runs desperately to suck her udders. Or more intense desperation of a wife who is very much attached to her husband, and a husband whose beloved is his wife is waiting intensely in separation of the husband who has gone away to come back. Let my mind be similarly attached to your lotus feet in separation. So when a devotee is having healthy fear of the material distractions, and there is a healthy and determined desire, great determination, sincere determined desire that I want to be the servant of the servant of the Lord's servant so that I get his service, there develops an intense longing in separation for the association of the Lord. When, oh my dear Lord, will I achieve your association, and when this separation will end? And therefore these three examples have been given for that. So that intense separation is the fire that burns any traces of material desire that may remain. The intense longing in separation from Krishna, that viraha, is the fire that burns. Now, is this intense longing sufficient? Because we've almost reached like a climax here. Servant of the servant, healthy fear of material, any trace of material desires, and an intense longing for Krishna's association. When will I come back to you? Just as baby bird wants its mother to come back, just as a calf runs to its mother in the evening, just as a wife in separation of her husband waits for her husband to come back and seeing him becomes so very happy. When will I achieve the same happiness right now in separation from you? Is that sufficient? So this is the conclusion of all of these intense feelings of a devotee who is fixed in Krishna consciousness despite all adversities. Mamuttama shloka janeshu sakhyam sansara chakre bhramatah svakarma bhi tvanmaya yatmatma judara giheshu asakta chittasya nanath bhuyat. My dear Lord, O Master, I am wandering throughout this material world as a result of my fruitive activities. Therefore, I simply seek friendship in the association of your pious and enlightened devotees. Devotional service in intense longing for the association of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the mood of being the humble servant of the servant of the servant with a healthy fear of material distractions is complete only when we do it in the association of like-minded, intelligent devotees of the Lord, seeking their association. Not just being in the presence of them, but actually wanting to associate with such like-minded, intelligent, enlightened devotees. Because this is what actually cuts off bondage to body, wife, children, and home, which is Krishna's duratyaya maya, or his insurmountable energy. It cuts off all the attachment to the external energy, and the mind and one's consciousness and everything is attached to Nath, our only master, Krishna. Sri Sri Radha Gopinath. So, this is a beautiful chapter or a beautiful episode in the sixth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, where both of these points, as Srila Prabhupada is mentioning, this purport is expressed. How Krita Dyuti, inner adversity, is blaming logically in a deep grief that the Supreme Lord is unintelligent, and how Vritrasur, in his deepest calamity, is understanding the Lord's glories, singing his glories, assuring Indra of it, and confident of going back home, back to Godhead. So today, on this auspicious occasion of the appearance day of Radha Gopinath, it would be nice with this understanding to approach them for their mercy. That, my dear Lord, this is what we aspire for. The association of your wonderful devotees who are enlightened, who are like-minded, situated at a lotus feet, so that we can engage our body, our minds, and everything in your service in the mood of a humble servant of the servant of the servant, and thus give up all attachment to body, to home, to relatives, any other desire or aspirations in this material creation. So today is this wonderful occasion. This is the 22nd appearance, I think. I was talking to Sankirtan Prabhu before I came in, and I asked him, I wanted to be sure, what birthday is it of Radha Gopinath? Which one? Is it 22nd, 21st, 23rd? And he said 16th. I said, what? I was confused. I said 16th, and I started calculating 2010, 16, 1994? No, 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 no. I was already here in the temple. Radha Gopinath was not welcomed in front of my eyes. So said, Krishna never ages beyond 16. So that was a deep revelation today on this day. So we are celebrating the 16th birthday of the Supreme Lordship, Shri Radha Gopinath, on his 22nd appearance day. And in the afternoon, we'll have the wonderful description from the lotus mouth of Govinda Prabhu and other great devotees. As I said, we weren't there, and Radha Gopinath was welcomed. They were there, and they were a part of this historic occasion. So kindly come and participate in the afternoon session. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanande Hari, Shri Shri Radha Gopinath ji Bhagavan ki jai. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. There is another announcement. In the evening, we are going to have kirtans. I think it's from 5 o'clock onwards, or maybe 4 o'clock onwards. Please find out. And we'll also be dedicating these kirtans in the memory of His Grace Aindra Prabhu, a very senior and very well-known and dedicated disciple of Srila Prabhupada, especially known for his wonderful contributions for the 24 hours kirtan in Vrindavan. He recently left his body, and his memory, and as an offering to him, we'll be dedicating the evening's kirtan to him. Hare Krishna.